Local news, culture, and NPR.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is a local edition. And I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight for our big post-primary show. Yesterday was primary day in New York State, and we have results to go over around our area, around the region, and around the state. Big news in Sullivan County's hottest race. Preliminary results showing incumbent Sullivan County Sheriff Mike Schiff besting challenger Tim Diamond by a margin of about 18 points. Coming up, WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Jesse King has a big breakdown on that Republican primary, as well as results for Democratic primary races for Woodstock mayor and town council seats, and the heated primary for Middletown mayor. How did incumbent Mayor Joseph DeStefano fare against his challenger Orange County legislator Joel Sierra? Those results and more from Jesse King coming up in the second half of the program. Before that, I'll talk with David Lombardo of the Capitol Press Room to dive deep on what yesterday's primary results mean for statewide politics, especially New York City's Democrat mayoral primary. But let's start with the latest statewide news, including reactions to that mayoral race from notable New York lawmakers. And since we are in the thick of graduation season this week, we'll begin with a quick update on the cell phone ban in schools. The clock is ticking for New York school districts to publish their so-called distraction-free policies. That's the new bell-to-bell cell phone ban for K-12 classrooms. Schools have until August 1st to outline how it will work for them. Governor Kathy Hochul was on Long Island this week talking to school administrators in Hicksville.
And our teachers also, across the country, 74% have said it is impossible to teach and connect with our young people anymore because they're competing with TikTok dance videos, and the kids are just not learning the way they used to be able to.
While visiting Plattsburgh today, Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie weighed in on yesterday's primary results after the victory of an upstart member of his chamber in the Democratic primary for New York City mayor. The speaker says he is ready to work with the next mayor, no matter who it is. Hastie made the comments hours after Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani won an 11-way Democratic primary, defeating former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo in his comeback bid.
I've always, as the Speaker of the Assembly from New York City, I'm a lifetime New York City resident. I've always been, whether it's Mayor de Blasio, Mayor Adams, and of course, who the next mayor will be, I've always been, the best friend or best ally, because I like to be able to go home. I want to be able to be welcomed home. So I've always made it a point to be a good steward for the city's interests.
Northern New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York's 21st District also reacted to the surprise victory of Mamdani in the New York City mayoral primary, framing it as a repudiation of the Democratic Party and blaming Governor Hochul for this primary result, as Stefanik herself considers a run for governor next year. In a statement on social media, Stefanik called Zohran Mamdani a, quote, anti-Semitic, jihadist, communist candidate, end quote. Stefanik argued that Governor Hochul is not capable of defeating this type of politics from Democrats, tweeting at the governor that Mamdani won, quote, because of your silence, weakness, and ineptitude, end quote, from Elise Stefanik. Well, for more reaction to yesterday's primaries at the state level, especially Mamdani's unexpected win in New York City, and what it means for statewide politics, I spoke with David Lombardo of Public Radio's The Capitol Press Room earlier this afternoon. We cover what it means for New York Democrats, Albany dynamics, and the ambitions of Antonio Delgado and others who are on the road to the 2026 gubernatorial race. We also explore what these results say about voter turnout, shifting Democratic coalitions, and the role of younger and more progressive voters. Thank you so much, Dave, for being here to help break down the primaries.
My pleasure.
So let's start, like we said, with New York City. Was this a surprising outcome, and why do you think it happened?
I think the result is definitely a surprise. I don't think people envisioned that after the first round of ranked choice voting and for listeners, this is a system that exists in New York City for primary elections and is not available elsewhere in New York. But I think there was an expectation that Andrew Cuomo, the former governor, would be leading in the first round of ranked choice voting, where ultimately you need to have a 51% of support to get elected. A simple plurality won't do it for you. And there was an expectation that Assemblymember Zoran Mamdani, his challenger to the far left, who was considered the number two contender, might be able to make up any sort of first round deficit in future rounds of voting. But what we saw was that Mamdani, after the first round of voting, was the leader. He had a plurality of support. And I think that was a big surprise, because it spoke to both his popularity, but also the strength of this anti-Cuomo movement that has been present since he resigned in 2021 as governor and gained steam once he came back into the spotlight with his mayoral campaign. And the anti-Cuomo forces really coalesced behind a couple different options, but primarily with this focus on beating Andrew Cuomo. So I don't think I'm necessarily that surprised that Zoran Mamdani is going to be the Democratic nominee in New York City, but I am surprised by the scope and magnitude of his victory.
Beyond the personal aspect of the candidates and, you know, their history and their baggage in some cases, what does this result say about what Democratic voters are looking for, at least in New York City?
Well, I think you make a important point there, because Andrew Cuomo comes to this race with a lot of baggage. It's not just him, but it's his dad. I mean, they've both been now running for mayor of New York City for half a century, both being denied. And I think this can't necessarily be seen as a repudiation of him. It can't necessarily be seen as a repudiation of more centrist Democratic politics or an embrace of, say, Democratic socialist ideas. I think there are a lot of ingredients to this victory for Assemblymember Zoran Mamdani. And most important, I think, for him was the way he was able to turn his messaging into a populist message that wasn't necessarily identified as the Democratic socialist message. It was something that resonated with people who might be more centrist, as well as those people who might be more to the left, because he talked about affordability in a way that I think resonated with a lot of people. So his message was something that was really important, but also the way he was delivering that message. He is a once in a generation communicator, both in terms of the way he talks and the way he packages his messaging. And I think that enabled him to catch fire in a way that someone else who might have the same viewpoint or might talk the same way in a one-on-one conversation could not. So I think those are some of the big elements. And I'm curious to see how the Democratic Party moves forward based on this, because there are some reductive ways of looking at this, which would be, oh, social media is important. Well, yeah, it is important, but you have to have a message and messenger that work on social media. Well, populism is important. Yeah, but you need to hit the right populist notes and not be uncomfortable talking about things like raising taxes. And so I think couple people are watching this election with real questions about what it means for their future. One of them being the Lieutenant Governor, Antonio Delgado, who's hoping that he can launch some sort of populist challenge to Kathy Hochul in 2026 for the gubernatorial nomination of the Democratic Party. I also think that incumbent Mayor Eric Adams is watching this to see whether he might have some pathway as a centrist running in New York City. Already we heard from Long Island Congresswoman Laura Gillen, who has run kind of as a centrist Democrat, that she's thinks that Zoran Mamdani is a real problem and is disassociating with him. I'm curious to see how Kathy Hochul responds to this, because I think that'll set the direction for the state Democratic Party as a whole, because she is the de facto leader.
And just to stay with that for a moment, you mentioned Antonio Delgado and how he might be positioning himself for a run in light of what happened in New York City and the results of this primary. And you're also saying, like, you know, these results don't necessarily mean you can't be too reductive about what it means. You can't say too strongly, well, this means they're embracing more of a socialist agenda, things like that. But that doesn't mean that outside of New York City, people can't spin those implications various ways. So beyond Delgado, what do you think these results in New York City might mean for the rest of New York state politics?
I think that it could be contained to a certain degree, because what we've seen over the last 6 years now is that socialist candidates have had success in New York City for the most part. There is an exception in the Catskills with Sarah Hanna-Shrestha, an assembly member who was successful in unseating a Democratic incumbent. But again, that also speaks to someone who ran against a very unpopular incumbent. She had a very populist message. So I think my takeaway would be, if I'm trying to replicate this success as a Democrat in upstate New York, whether it's in an assembly race, a Senate race, or a large municipality, I think the message has to be, one, stay true to yourself. Zoran Mamdani is good at this stuff, and he leaned into what he was good at. If you're not good at that, don't try to do it, because voters can suss out that type of insincerity. But also, that populist message is something that works. It's something that crosses party lines. Assemblymember Mamdani has talked about how he appeals to the Trump AOC voter, something that seems like an oxymoron, but it is something that exists. But like in the mayoral elections that we saw this past Tuesday outside of New York City, where there were Democratic primaries, whether it's Syracuse, Buffalo, Albany, there wasn't any sort of populist uprising. We saw candidates who were backed by the Working Families Party, the liberal third party in New York, be successful. But I think for the most part, they were very establishment aligned. And I think for the most part, the establishment has the infrastructure, they have the political support to be successful in the Democratic Party moving forward still.
Any other messages that you see coming out of these upstate primaries? I mean, it's a very local primary, this past one that we just had. It was, you know, very different town by town, county by county. But what, if any, other messages can you pull from what happened upstate?
I was surprised by the amount of money that was spent in some of these races, particularly by outside forces. And I think that speaks to the new reality of how big money is part of not just congressional or presidential elections, and not just assembly and Senate elections, but local elections. Obviously, in New York City, I think $25 million was brought in by outside groups to spend against Assembly Mamdani's campaign. But even in Albany, I think more than $1 million was raised by candidates and outside interests. And I think that speaks to how important these races are and how people recognize that the outcomes are so significant. But I also think what we saw was that grassroots outreach is still very important, whether it's in New York City, where the Cuomo campaign was relying primarily on that media blitz on the TV and on social media that they were paying for. I think the people who were knocking on the most doors, the people who were making those contacts with voters, were ultimately the most successful, whether you were in New York City or in Albany and Syracuse.
You can't predict the future, but do you think that will be a truism moving forward over the course of the next couple of years?
I think that for races in the legislature, whether that's Congress or here in Albany at the Capitol, I think that knocking on doors can make a much bigger difference than, say, a TV ad blitz. If you're running a gubernatorial campaign, though, where you're in a state with 19 million people, it's just not practical, one, to build up the infrastructure of volunteers to knock on all those doors, or for you yourself to ring all those doorbells. So I think for that gubernatorial campaign, I think it's really important that you have money to spend on that ad blitz. And that's something that Kathy Hochul has no problem doing as governor. She's been a prolific fundraiser. And it's really one of the things that I'm watching for with Antonio Delgado, and trying to assess the sincerity of his campaign. Because in July, we'll get a campaign finance filing from him. And if he's been able to bring in $2, $3, even $4 million at this point, then I take him much more seriously than if he's only got a few $100,000 in the bank heading into a year-long campaign, where he's definitely going to need in excess of $10 million to run a serious challenge.
We're talking just a day after the primary, so I don't know what, if any, demographic information is connected to the results from yesterday's primary. We did talk about the role of more progressive candidates or progressive voters. What about younger voters? Is there any sign of what they were doing yesterday?
Yes. In New York City, young people made up a disproportionate share of the electorate. And even in a Democratic primary, you would expect that young people make up a larger share of the vote than, say, the general electorate. But they turned out in ways that has always been promised and are maybe threatened by young people. But yeah, that 18 to I think 48 demographic voted in real significant numbers in New York City. And I think that can be a major source of the victory for Zoran Mamdani. It's a movement that was energized. He himself is 33. So I think he speaks their language to a certain degree, but he's also talking about issues they care about and whether anyone else can mobilize those young people in the same way remains to be seen, because we haven't really seen this type of turnout before by young people. And again, Mamdani as a candidate is kind of a unicorn.
And here's yet another thing in this conversation that now I'm wondering, like, to what extent might that translate past New York City? Will we see that trend continue? I imagine New York Democrats and Democrats around the country would be curious to see if there'd be more excitement among young people after this primary.
Yeah, but it's all contingent on how the party sets itself up, and it's contingent on the candidates that they back. It's contingent on the issues that they push, because Zoran Mamdani was not the establishment choice. In fact, I have to imagine the state Democratic Party chair, Jay Jacobs, doesn't know what to do with himself right now when his former ally, Andrew Cuomo, someone who speaks the language that he knows, is out. And maybe he needs to reckon with where the party is heading, or at least where it needs to be heading if it wants to grab on to these voters who can make a real big difference in some of these swing districts where they're often taken for granted as someone who won't turn out.
Last thing before we go, looking ahead, you know, what do you think we should be watching in Albany as we get closer to this 2026 election cycle?
I think the thing to watch is how the Governor Kathy Hochul, positions herself for the 2026 legislative session. Is she going to take this mayoral victory by Zoran Mamdani, where he got more votes than she got in New York City in the 2022 gubernatorial primary, as a message that she needs to moderate her politics? Will she take it as a reinforcement of what she already believes and the fact that she needs to pivot more to the center? So there are these moving parts that she's going to be responding to that I'm very curious to see, because she has this gubernatorial primary coming up now, just 12 months away.
All right. Well, we've been talking to David Lombardo from the Capitol Press Room. Thank you so much for being here with us to break down the primaries.
My pleasure. Always love the sound of my own voice.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dolb. Our show tonight's all about yesterday's primaries in New York State, and it's time for us to dig deeper into some of the local races. For more, we turn to Jesse King, Hudson Valley Bureau Chief for WAMC and host of 51%, which you can hear on Radio Catskill Monday nights at 8. Tim Bruno spoke to Jesse King live this morning on Radio Chatskill.
Jesse, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Before we get into some of the details of who won, who lost, what do you think were some of the biggest takeaways from yesterday's results across the Hudson Valley? Any unexpected outcomes?
I think there were a few unexpected outcomes, but for the most part, I feel like incumbents fared pretty well. There are, well, obviously we'll get to a few of them, but there were a couple of basically a lot of primaries that had multiple people running in them. So there was a lot of sort of like three-way or four-way races and stuff like that. But I think incumbents have fared pretty well last night.
One of the races that saw more energy and engagement, I guess we could say, was the Sullivan County Sheriff's race with the Republican primary. Two Republicans vying for that. It got a little nasty there, too. Who won that race?
Yes, definitely. It's probably the loudest race in Sullivan County last night anyway. So the winner who came out on top ended up being longtime Sheriff Michael Schiff. He had 59% of the vote. compared to his challenger, Tim Diamond, who had 41% of the vote. Diamond was a retired senior investigator with the New York State Police, and like you said, it was a pretty heated and bitter race. You know, Diamond basically ran a smear campaign that echoed allegations that, you know, the FBI is investigating the sheriff's office for corruption and misconduct, that there's a toxic work environment there, and that the sheriff's office allegedly covered up like a love triangle involving a former deputy, the undersheriff, and an inmate. Schiff has denied all of that. And, you know, last night, I mean, it seems like the voters are siding with him. Schiff said it's simply time to get back to work, and it's highly likely that he will win in November. I mean, there's no Democrats in this race, and Schiff has been the sheriff for about 20 years.
Yeah, so this was sort of the November general race in a way for him.
Yes, yes.
These are unofficial results we're talking about, but it looks as if he won a commanding win there, 59% of the vote compared to Diamond's 41% of the vote. Let's move over to Woodstock, where there was the Woodstock Town Supervisor race, a Democratic primary. What happened there? It was a three-way race.
Yes, yes. And this is where I was last night. So this is where a lot of my work focused yesterday evening, just going to the different candidates' watch parties and chatting with them and their supporters. But there was a three-way Democratic primary between Woodstock Councilmember Anula Cordes, environmentalist Aaron Moran, and journalist David Wallace. Incumbent Supervisor Bill McKenna is not seeking a fifth two-year term, so he wasn't in this race, but he did endorse Aaron Moran. As it happens, you know, last night, Councilmember Anula Cordes ended up coming out on top. She had 61% of the vote, followed by David Wallace. He had 27% of the vote. And Aaron Moran, unfortunately, she got only 12% of the vote, even despite having the supervisor's endorsement. So
there was a little bit of, I guess you might call it a little controversy there. McKenna challenged the petitions from Wallace. It didn't matter in the end, though, but there were accusations that there were signatures from non-Woodstock residents on them. Do you think this had any kind of impact on the race?
I think the biggest impact maybe on the race is just some general feelings of a toxic environment in Woodstock town government and just some general drama in Woodstock politics. I don't think the petitions ended up really having much of an impact on the overall race. Like you said, the supervisor challenged David Wallace's petitions to even get on the ballot for the primary, but the Ulster County Board of Elections ultimately approved him for the ballot by a margin of about 2 or 3 signatures. And he actually, you know, he performed pretty well with 27% of the vote, considering that sort of like obstacle to get onto the ballot earlier this year. I think the biggest issue in this race was sort of, you know, what to do about the illegal shady dump. Despite years of lawsuits and court orders trying to clean up this illegal dump in the hamlet of Shady, it still hasn't been cleaned up. And a lot of the debate from candidates was sort of around how should the town move forward. They did differ slightly on how they want to address it. You know, Wallace and Moran simply wanted to, you know, more strictly enforce Woodstock's own dumping laws. And I know Moran was also, she was previously on the Woodstock Environmental Commission, which had its own remediation plan for the site, so she was promoting that in her campaign as well. Cordes has said that, you know, the situation basically needs a total reset. And so she wanted to meet with state leaders and attorneys to explore the town's legal options while actually opening up a dialogue with the property owner to hopefully handle the cleanup more peacefully. Her campaign had a pretty heavy, just sort of like getting the community together and gathering community input focus. And so I think that might have played a role in her win last night.
And just to be clear to listeners, there is a town called Shady, and there was an illegal dump, and therefore a shady dump in Shady. Okay, I had to. So let's look ahead in November by winning this nomination. Cordes, what are the chances there for Councilmember Anula Cordes for that seat?
Oh, yeah. I mean, by winning the Democratic nomination, that puts her at a very heavy advantage to win and to be, you know, officially town supervisor, you know, come November's election. There are no Republicans running. Woodstock is a very, you know, Democrat-leaning community. And so unless she faces any major write-in or outside campaign, she's likely to win. So far, you know, I've spoken with the other candidates. It doesn't sound like there's you know, any plans on their end to continue in, as like an as a write-in candidate in November. So it's looking pretty good for her right now. And if she does win in November, she will actually get to appoint her replacement on the town board just to fill out the rest of her term. I spoke with Cordes last night, and she said that she will. She hasn't released names of who she's considering for that yet, but she will pick someone with an environmental background for that position.
And speaking of the board, the Democratic primary for two seats on the town board there was very close, too.
Yes, yes. So you had three Democrats running for two open seats on the town board. It ended up being a very close race with each candidate almost getting like a third to a little over a third of the vote. But Lori Osmond and Lily Karolkoff ended up squeaking by Marcel Nagel. So, if that stands in November, Woodstock could actually have, you know, its first all-women government, for the first time in its history.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Jesse King, Hudson Valley Bureau Chief for WAMC and also our partner at the New York Public News Network. Jesse also hosts the show 51%. She's breaking down some of the Hudson Valley results and highlights from yesterday's New York primary. Let's move over to the New Paltz. The town supervisor there was a Democratic primary there. Who were the candidates and who won?
Yeah, I feel like the candidates for this race were pretty interesting because you had the incumbent New Paltz town supervisor, Amanda Gatto, who has been in the seat since last year. And you had her facing off a challenge from the village of New Paltz, Mayor Tim Rogers. And it turns out that Tim Rogers ended up winning last night with 54% of the vote. Amanda Gatto got 46% of the vote. And so I feel like it's a pretty interesting race because basically Tim Rogers is trying to come over to the town of New Paltz because he wants to actually merge the village and town governments and obviously run them both. So.
And that is a way to save money or be more efficient?
Yeah, I think from my conversations with him, that seems to be his reasoning for it. He says that, the original reason that the village and town were incorporated separately to begin with isn't really relevant anymore, and they share a lot of services. I think he said in his mind it just makes sense to merge the two governments, and they've considered it in the past. It just hasn't happened yet, and I think he's hoping that this will move this forward. It hasn't actually gone to voters yet, but it seems that that's the goal.
We talked about the Sullivan County Sheriff's race being bitter. Down in Middletown in Orange County, longtime Mayor Joseph DeStefano and his challenger Joel Sierra had a pretty bitter race as well.
Yes. That was between longtime Mayor Joseph DeStefano and Orange County legislator Joel Sierra. DeStefano has been in the office for years, and he ended up winning again last night. He had 77% of the vote to Joel Sierra's 22% of the vote. So that's going to be, if he wins in November, which is highly likely, that'll be his fifth consecutive term and his seventh overall. So he's been mayor of Middletown for a very long time. Joel Sierra was trying to position himself as a change to that, and he was... they both ultimately kind of got in the mud with slinging accusations against one another. But Joel Sierra specifically accused the mayor of lying and corruption, while DeStefano targeted Sierra for missing a large chunk of his meetings as a county legislator. Sierra has said that, he would miss a lot of those meetings because of a work-related injury. He's also a former city firefighter, but it was a lot of accusations between the two. And ultimately, Mayor DeStefano came out pretty decidedly on top.
Yeah, he cruised to victory, 77% of the vote with unofficial results in, and Sierra with 22% of the vote. And as you said, he's been a longtime mayor. If he wins in November, and it's likely he will, since there are no Republicans winning, that's going to be his fifth consecutive term and seventh overall. I mean, that is a long time to be in that office.
Yes, yes. Middletown has been very used to Mayor DeStefano for a long time now.
Jesse King is the Hudson Valley Bureau Chief for WAMC and our partner at the New York Public News Network. She's also the host of 51%. Jesse, thanks for taking the time today, and we'll talk to you, I'm sure, before November.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Tim Bruno. Remember, you can hear live local news and conversations with Tim on Radio Catskill every weekday morning at 10, only here on Radio Catskill. You can also hear 51% with Jesse King every Monday night at 8. And you can hear just about everything from us at any time at wjffradio.org. That's our website. Check it out, wjffradio.org. Check us out on YouTube as well. You can see my full interview with David Lombardo of the Capitol Press Room on Radio Catskills YouTube page. Find us, like us, subscribe, ring that bell, share those videos. Radio Catskill on YouTube. It's the latest thing. That's it for the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back tomorrow night. We'll do it all over again. But for now, stay with us for more news coming right up from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.